everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
It's so weird to start these when we've been talking for an hour
already. Just about catching up. And yeah.
We're ready to let you in now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes, listeners. That's a good point. Maybe we should tape those pre-conversations. Oof.
And you have to pay money to hear them. You have to hear, well, that'll be blackmail material for all of us, won't it?
Yeah.
That's no.
I'm sorry, listeners. There's just things that we can't let you in on
yet.
Yeah,
sorry.
You'd have to sign an NDA, too.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, right. Yeah. Very strong. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, this week we're talking about 1981.
Woo!
Over 40 years ago.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's the year I was born.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Also, Heath texted us and said he was 6 years old and he had things to say.
I know. I was like, well then.
Well then. We're in.
I'm not going to say that wasn't in my head when I was doing research. I'm like, which of these things triggered Heath?
Yeah.
I'm still pissed about the royal wedding.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
There's a lot to be pissed about.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
First off, of course.
Yeah.
Unmitigated gall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which of you would like to go first with your gall?
I mean, I can start.
Let's do it.
Well, I need to preface this with saying that I don't have this before I say it.
Oh, so it's not Morton's neuroma or dead feet.
No, I have both of those.
Both of those.
We've clearly established my feet are no bueno and are definitely dead. So my unmitigated gall this week is lice.
Because I'm very glad you prefaced.
Yeah. Also, none of my children have it, just
okay.
To be clear.
Okay.
Why it's my unmitigated gall is because I have been living in a world where, like, I had forgotten about lice.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just was like, oh, I thought we kind of, like, moved past it somehow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I realize that this is somewhat naive. You know, there's probably someone right now dealing with lice that's like, oh, really? We moved past it? But
you're sounding like a COVID denier right
now. Yeah, it did. But here's what happened to me this week. I was driving in Windsor Heights, and I came to a stoplight, and I looked over at an office building, and one of the offices is
the place
Lice
you speak of.
Clinics of America. And when I tell you I was shook, I was shook. I went home and looked it up because I said, what are they doing there?
Yep.
It's a hot air treatment for kids with lice. You go there and they put like
I've seen that. Yeah.
But I'm out here living like we didn't need a whole clinic. And now I can't get it out of my head. We were in Target yesterday and Mason was looking at hats and I was like, absolutely not.
Oh, you didn't want him to try it on in case there were little lice.
In case there was lice.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
And I know the sign because it says that the way the sign's written, and I don't remember how it is, but it looks like it says slice.
Yes.
I have seen that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just like, I'm is like, this? Is that where they make the Sprite alternative from the Pepsi-Cola bottling company?
Speaking of 1981.
Wow. Lice Clinics of America. Mm-hmm.
So your gall is the fact that lice still exists.
Yes!
Mm-hmm. We can put a man on the moon. Why can't we get rid of lice?
Why can't we get rid of lice? Uh-huh.
Also, it never occurred to me to burn them up on someone's head.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I was, you know, you had to do that like crazy treatment, like pull it through your hair type of thing. Like, I remember from youth.
Yeah.
But
I remember them coming into, like, our homeroom class, and the school nurse would just go from kid to kid and then just would comb through your hair and look into see if you had lice.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know.
I remember
is there not a better way
to
do this?
Yeah, I remember seeing them on other kids' heads and yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because and when the kids are younger, like, it's not unusual to get, like, a lice note. Like, hey, there's someone in the school had, like, or whatever, and they want you to check your kid's head, but I was out here just living like that didn't exist and just happy on a Wednesday afternoon driving. And I looked over and I was like, there's a clinic, a whole clinic. What am I doing?
Oh, they've got a lease.
Yeah, they have a lease. They are.
They're paying an electric bill.
I'll tell you.
Property tax.
The sub unmitigated gall of this is that I watched the video on their website and the lady was doing the treatment without gloves.
Ooh. Oh.
And I found that to be suspect. Gross.
Uh-huh.
And just really bad directing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I'd also like to point out to everybody right now, my head itches. Like, we're talking about this and my head itches.
I'm sorry.
It's so true, though, because, you know, as I've talked about, there's some outside cats.
Yep.
So I am very careful with, like, washing my hands thoroughly, like, when I come back in and, like, making sure that none of the dishes match with my cats and, you know, all the different things.
But still, I'll be sitting on the couch and I'll feel itchy and I'm like, oh my God, it happened. The fleas are here. Mm-hmm. Oh. And, you know, it's kind of similar to the lice situation.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fleas are just cat lice. Same thing.
It's the same thing, yeah. I wonder if you could take your cat into Lice Clinics of America. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So... Oh, thanks boy. For that, Lice Clinics.
Of America.
I'm sorry you had to go through that.
I know. That's I'm sorry that I felt the need to bring everyone else into it, but...
Every listener right now is scratching their head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think maybe we've gotten a little unvigilant about hats and things. If we got Clinics of America popping up, we needed to be a little more on guard.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right.
But the name Lice Clinics of America suggests there are Lice Clinics of Portugal.
Of
Canada.
And is the treatment
Denmark?
Different?
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a good question.
Right. Do southern hemisphere lice react differently than northern hemisphere
right.
lice?
Right, maybe the heat treatment doesn't work. They have to do a cold treatment.
Yes.
Or they have to do it in a different direction, you know, like the toilet water.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What For do you sure. do?
Yep.
Like when you go to McDonald's in different countries, you get different things.
You get different things.
You just get a different kind of lice.
Also, I just had a question now. So you were just in Palm Springs and you put on a fashion show for all of us. Did you put anything on your head?
I did not.
Oh, good.
Okay. I did a couple. I have done that before in Palm Springs at a hat store. They have a hat store.
Yes.
I feel like you're probably Lice Central. Safer in like a more of a store than say like, you know. Target. The Target Kids section.
Yeah, that's... Oh, God. Target Kids section. Well, God. I think that's maybe a circle of hell, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it... Okay. Yeah. That tracks with their logo and everything.
Yeah. All right, Heath, what's your gall?
My gall, and anyone who knows me won't be surprised by this, my gall is daylight savings time.
Because it's today. It's today, our friends.
Yep, we lost our hour. We did. And I get it. I mean, I know people that are proponents of it that'll be like, oh, we get an extra hour of daylight. And we don't. It's the same amount. I mean, it grows by like a minute or two every day, but it's just, it's not extra. Like the sun didn't just bequeath us with an extra hour starting today because the calendar said so.
Yeah. It's not extra.
Yeah. And I know that we're probably never going to get rid of it. I think the government tried to a couple of years ago, but those dipshits can't do anything.
They can't do anything.
So. I have, as a solutions-oriented podcast,
is
what we have here.
Is that who we are? I didn't realize that.
That's a whole new category to put us in.
I have some ways to do this better.
Okay. You
know? Excellent.
Love that.
If you insist on skipping ahead in the middle of the night, do it at 2 a.m. on a Friday morning.
Okay.
Because everyone can power through a Friday. And then you got Saturday, you got Sunday to kind of assimilate to it. And by Monday, you're not just wishing you were dead.
It's the Sunday thing. You're right.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Or even better, why does it have to be in the middle of the night on the weekend when we're sleeping? Yeah. Why can't it be at 4 o'clock on Wednesday? Why can't we just jump ahead to 5?
That is brilliant.
Yeah. We just, you know, you go home from work a little early, but not because, you know, you jumped ahead to 5, so it's 5, it's time to go home.
But then, like, companies could be like, look how generous we are. We're letting you off an hour early to celebrate daylight savings, so it's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's good for them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My mind is blown. Because that's the best solution that I've ever heard.
Excellent idea. Yeah.
A 4 o'clock on a Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
can
God.
We copyright that right now? Can you copyright it?
Can we make t-shirts that say Heath 2024?
Mm-hmm. On it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, also this year was a leap year. So all of our jobs, we all got another extra day of work out of us.
Yes!
We didn't get paid more unless you were hourly.
Uh-huh.
Good point.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So we need some of that back. Hour on Wednesday.
Wow. That's so smart.
Yeah. I'm also so glad that we're a solutions-oriented podcast.
Yes.
I didn't realize we were.
I was doubting that until he said a real solution. I think we need to specify that a little more. I'm going to go ahead and say you two might be solutions-oriented. I'm just a problem. I'm just lice, dead feet. I got nothing. He's over here solving daylight savings time, and I'm like, lice still exist? Doesn't track?
Well, that's it. I mean, we set up a problem, and then Heath solves it.
Heath solves it. That's another podcast idea. Just ask Heath.
Yeah, listeners, send me your problems. I'll solve them for you.
Oh, my God. That is a winner right there.
I will say that there was a bunch of rhetoric, you know, on the news, of course, about daylight savings time this week. And they had this clip of this, like, the oldest old guy that isn't Biden or Trump that was clearly in politics that was like, this is why daylight savings is important. And immediately I was like, why the old white guy again?
Why are we explaining something dumb? We don't need that.
Did no one look at this and say, could we get a younger scientist to explain? Could we get someone else?
Can we get Beyonce to explain it? Because then people would like it.
It would. For sure.
Get Dolly Parton to say she's a fan of it. And everyone would be like, done. Yeah. We'll do it then.
Solutions oriented. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad. Yeah. Well, maybe you can give me a solution for this one. Because my goal is, I mean, we're going to talk about guys, so I apologize. It's gross guys commenting and touching tattoos on women's bodies.
What? Oh. Did this happen to you?
Let me set this up, okay? So I got another tattoo recently, and I was talking with the artist. And if you're in Des Moines, by the way, the shop is Jade Rabbit Studio. It's excellent. It's all women and non-binary artists. It's really cool. It's a great environment. And I'm chatting with her about how rare it is to have women-led tattoo shops. Because they're very often like dude-heavy places, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're a woman seeking a tattoo, it can often be a very intimidating place to come into. If you're a woman artist trying to work in those places, I've heard it can be very intimidating.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about that. And then we move on to men commenting and or touching tattoos on women's bodies. So I related the time while we were talking about this. I forgot about this. I blocked it out, apparently. I was remembering the time I was at a Walgreens.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
Get this. The line at Walgreens. Okay.
I hate this already.
Yeah. It is summer. I'm wearing a tank top because that's what you do in Iowa in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I had a tattoo right here of a line. It's on my back shoulder. It's a line from a book. And there is a man behind me that reaches and pushes my strap aside so that he can, and touches the tattoo so he can be able, what's this say?
Was he blind? He doesn't need to use his hands to read it.
This is a very, very good point.
Is your tattoo in Braille?
It's embedded underneath. Then,
that would have been an invitation, perhaps. Uh-huh. This was not an invitation. And it was one of those moments where I just went like all sweat and all just sort of cold at the same time. And I think I mumbled something and then just left, right? Because I was like, this is disgusting and gross. So I was telling her this, my tattoo artist, and she said there was one time she was wearing a crop top. She had a stomach tattoo, and a guy reached out and touched her stomach tattoo and was like, oh, tell me about this. That felt so intimate and disgusting.
Oh, no.
And she's like, yeah, it's just, you know, all the artists there, right, they're all covered in tattoos. So they all had stories, and they're like, yeah, you know, this one and this one, they're touching this and they're touching that. And I'm like, why are we doing this? But it also feels like it's related to politics and men feeling like they have control over women's bodies. So,
wow. I am shook. I am shook.
My goal is that somehow tattoos embolden gross guys to be grosser. And I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I love tattoos. So I don't know what to do. What's the solution, Heath?
Do you know how to throw a punch?
I will learn.
Okay, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
That's a good solution. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good one.
Or tasers.
Tasers. Yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Or you could get a tattoo above the other tattoo that says, don't fucking touch me.
I like that a lot. Maybe one on every angle of my body.
Can you turn around and be like, oh, is this eye real? And just poke him in the eye. Oh, it is. Oh, it is. Great. Thank you.
That one.
I like to touch eyes.
Yeah, I like to touch eyes.
I'm a real eye gal.
I love to feel the slimy eyeballs.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's my goal. Shall we move on to 1981? Okay. I bet there were gross guys touching women then too.
Not in a good place, just so we know. Not in a good place.
Were you very disturbed?
I'm so disturbed by that.
Have you told Walgreens about this, by the way?
I figured it was just happens at Walgreens all the time, right?
Yeah. Like they'd probably write back and be like, yeah, no shit.
Oh my God.
Or they'd probably be like, well, I mean, what does it say on the back of your, make it clearer to read.
Oh.
Yeah. Whew. Anyway, Aaron, do you want to lead us out of this And sure. Move us into 1981?
Yeah.
Okay.
What a year. What a year.
What a year. Okay, so I chose things that, like, obviously, I was born in 1981, so yes. I don't have, like, you know, core memories necessarily.
You don't?
1981.
In utero? You don't?
I don't, unfortunately. You would think I would, but... So what I did was pick things that started in 1981 that then later in I encountered in my life.
Oh,
that
were smart. You know, okay. Yeah.
One of these was aerobics.
literally, they started in 81?
Yeah, 81 is when it kind of took on the form that it's known. It started in 1968. This doctor, and of course it was a male doctor,
of course.
Decided that aerobic exercise helped prevent disease. So he kind of came out with this recommendation that everyone needed to exercise regularly. And so this sort of like took off. Some other people tried to take it, kind of went with it. You know, we've got Jane Fonda started those aerobic videos.
Yes.
But then step aerobics kind of started developing in 1980 and it became a huge craze in 81, which is sort of the iteration of aerobics we understand now, where like you have that like pastel color block and you're like, N1, N2, and you've got the leg warmers. And coincidentally, this is the same year that Olivia Newton-John's song Physical.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, those two are just somehow, like, I feel like, I understand that wasn't the point of the song, but it sort of feels like she wrote it for aerobics because they always play that song.
Yes.
So my first time going to aerobics was like, I was younger. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it was middle school, high school. I know I went with my mom.
Oh,
and I know that we had the steps and we were moving and we were doing the exercise. And I remember thinking, why is this lady yelling so much? Because it would be step, not high enough, get it higher. And I was like, I can't. It was one of my first times realizing that other people's voices can be a problem for
yes,
me.
Yes, yeah.
That wasn't enough to stop me. I remember doing it. I think I took a class of it in college. I mean, I remember doing it, but it was always in random gyms. You know, you're playing a weird mix of songs, Olivia Newton-John's like Physical, and then, you know, it goes into something completely different. You're like, what? Stevie Wonder follows up Olivia Newton-John? What's happening? And it was always stepping off that block, which seemed like a bad move for me. At some point, I'm going to break an ankle.
Yeah.
But it was a real big craze that started and endured for a long time. And it kind of is credited with then like where we are now with P90X and Zumba and some of that other
What's
stuff.
What's P90X?
Like a super high intense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a set of DVDs that you watch at home and you just sweat your ass off and it's just like jumping around and it's sort of like, what's that thing that everyone was so into like 5 years ago? You know, the gyms that you'd go and you do the 24.2.
Oh, like the high intensity.
Yeah.
CrossFit at home.
It's like Jane Fonda on crack. Super high level. Like you're just supposed to be, like a sweaty mess. But so obviously it's continued to like reinvent itself. But it came out of this place where this guy was like, hey, exercise is helpful. And then somebody was like, let's do this. And let's step on this step and play weird songs.
Let's charge a bunch of money.
Yes.
And
here we are.
A follow-up question for you.
Of course.
Why was your mom bringing you to aerobics in middle school?
I think I wanted to go. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I think maybe she was taking it, and I was like, I want to, you know.
Because it probably looked fun or something.
It did, yeah. And then I realized quickly that, no, that's not fun.
No.
That is a recipe for disaster. And I remember thinking, it's going to be very dependent on that person's energy and voice. You know, like when you have one person leading a class like that, you really have to be in tune with that person or feel good about that person. Because otherwise, the whole time you're like, shut up.
Yeah. I have always hated exercise classes. Have you ever been a class person? Or do you do it by yourself, like exercise
by
yourself?
I prefer to do it by myself.
Me too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the few times that I have gone to classes, I would get so annoyed because like the people would be like, I know it's hard, but smile while you're working through it.
What?
I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah. There's always that kind
of. I am sweating my organs out. I don't want to smile right now.
I think that might be a very like cisgender female
experience.
You know, like you need to look good and smile. I know it hurts, ladies.
Yeah, but smile through the pain.
Think how good you're gonna look for your man.
Oh, you can have a cupcake later. Yeah. Oh my god.
No, you can have Jello and fat free.
That's true.
Some snack wells.
Yeah. Yeah, one snack well.
I had to take an aerobics class in college. Oh. There was a class called personal wellness that you and I.
Uh-huh. Yes, and, that's right. Yes. Yeah,
and 3 days a week it was a lecture, and then 2 days a week it was a lab. And the first half of the semester, I think I had to take a skill lab, which it was archery. And the second half was a physical activity one, which I had to take aerobics because my options, because I was a freshman. And so my options were running stairs in the Unidome or aerobics. Uh-huh. And I was like, well,
running stairs in the Unidome?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, oh my you would just God. Apparently.
It was just like a stair class. Yeah.
Right, yeah, you would just run up. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'd purposely fall down those stairs to get out of it.
Yeah,
but yeah, I remember that. I remember they played the Judds. That was the song. I don't remember what song
like
it was.
Like Winona Judd?
Yeah, like Naomi and Winona Judd. Huh. And I remember, I don't remember the song and I don't remember the other songs, but I do recall she had like two playlists and she just alternated them for the entire semester.
No.
Yeah.
No.
There was a time like in the late 90s. Remember when Tybo was starting to like become a thing? I remember I got a video.
I forgot that word. That's great.
Yes. And I was watching it for a while and it was, you know, you watch the video and so it's the same playlist every time. And there was like a song from the Gap Band that I hated for 20 years. And it was only like the last couple of years. I'm like, okay, this is a good song. It's okay.
It's okay. It's, I just didn't like it in that context. Yeah.
I just don't have to associate it with self-hatred. So that's nice.
That is nice.
Yeah. On that note.
I love that we took the same aerobics class.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. In 1981, a movie was released, and it was called Superman 2.
Oh, I loved this movie so much.
Uh-huh. And once again, it was a sequel to Superman, obviously. Uh-huh. And it featured Christopher Reeve as Superman, and Gene Hackman and Margot Kidder were back, you know, Lex Luthor and Lois Lane. And the plot of the movie is General Zod and his two flunkies, who Superman accidentally released from the Phantom Zone, which is a Kryptonian prison they were banished to by Superman's dad right before Krypton exploded. And they've come to planet Earth to pick a fight with Superman because they're still pissed at his dad, and they just generally seem like dicks.
They are. They're big old dicks. Yeah.
I really want you to write movie reviews. So bad. Just like a place that you could go on the internet and be like, I just want to see what he thinks about this movie before I invest.
I think that's maybe one of our bonus routes is we do Heath on movies.
Oh, like a movie corner. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you my Killers of the Flower Moon review right now.
Please do.
Didn't see it because it doesn't need to be 3.5 hours long.
Good call.
Martin Scorsese, if you're that good, make it 2 hours and 25 minutes, tops.
Cut that shit down.
That's amazing because... Yeah. That'd be the first review on the website. Just one sentence. Didn't see it because it doesn't need to be 3 hours long. Terrific.
So most of Superman 2 was filmed at the same time as the first Superman movie. Oh, which started clear back in March of 1977, they say.
Wow.
And it was going on for about a year and a half. And they actually stopped in October of 78 because they had to finish editing the first Superman because it came out at the end of that year.
Wow.
Richard Donner was the director of the first film and had shot most of the second film, and then he was fired because he had a disagreement with the producers, and they hired a different director, Richard Lester, who decided to reshoot most of the second movie.
No way! Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And there are, recently they put out the Richard Donner cut of the not recently, probably 4 or 5 years ago, of the second one, so it's more like kind of what he had in mind for it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Is it way different?
It's a little bit different. It's not hugely different, but you know, I haven't seen Superman 2 in a while. You know, it's been since I was a kid since I've seen it, so it would be, I should watch them like back to back, like over the weekend or something like that, but I don't have as much time because of daylight savings time.
God damn it.
So I can't tell do it what, this weekend.
I'll rewatch them and report back because I remember so much of it. Yeah. And
So there's lots of weird stuff going on in the movie as far as shooting it goes. It's uncommon to kind of shoot the sequel to a movie at the same time as the original. I know they did that with Lord of the Rings, but usually you kind of put the first one out and see if people like it.
Yeah.
You know?
That is interesting.
And yeah, and they just to scrap all of what you've shot for the second film just to redo a bunch of it, like, you know, that's expensive. And it's even more uncommon for the movie to end up being a hit because your average person would likely assume that if they reshot most of it, that it's going to be crap.
Yeah.
Like especially now with the internet, like that, all that gets out and kind of people are just like, oh, I don't know about that. But as anyone who's seen Superman 2 knows, it's a real good time. They
it's
did
a
it
great
nice.
Time.
Yep. They did it. Terrence Stamp plays General Zod, and he just hates everything.
Yes.
And then his one of his cohorts, Ursa, she just hates men, and who can blame her? Yeah. You know, basically, just listening to what Amy has said about men today.
She probably got touched by some guy.
He probably her tattoo.
What's that say?
Yeah.
And every time she beats up a male chauvinist, she takes something from him, like a badge or a patch or something. Yes. And by the end of the movie, she's kind of got these all over her uniform.
That's right.
And this is also the movie where Superman gives up his power so he can sleep with Lois Lane, even though she didn't really ask him to.
Right.
But then afterward, he has to get them back so he can save the planet, or so he says. because maybe Superman, maybe even Superman's pig. Maybe he'll just be like, yeah, whatever, babe. I'll do what you need.
I got what I needed. Mm-hmm. Also, you're right, because when he says he gave up the powers, Lois Lane looks like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, well, you're not as hot anymore.
Right, yeah, yeah. That was one of my top three things I liked about you, Clark.
Exactly. Also, speaking of that sex scene, I remember that being a formative moment and me thinking that's what sex is going to be like, where you say, I got to go slip into something more comfortable. And then you put on this, like, weird nightgown lace thing, and you have high heels that are like slippers. Do you remember those?
Uh-huh.
And then you suddenly, like, the light gets soft and everything, and then you go off and you fuck Superman. So, I mean, that's
a high expectation.
That's what I thought it was going to be. And then I realized quickly, oh, no, you don't wear the nightgowns and you don't do the slippers and you're not fucking Superman. That is out of the picture.
That's a misnomer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, disappointment.
It does, talking about this movie, though, reminds me of, gosh, it's been a couple of years. I was in Hy-Vee, the downtown Hy-Vee here in Des Moines, and a gentleman came up to me and said, you know, if you worked out, you'd look like Clark Kent.
Oh, that belongs in the Gross Guys segment.
Can we break this down? Okay.
Yep, please
so
do.
First off,
uh-huh.
Heath works out a lot.
He does,
lot.
Yes.
Apparently
yeah.
not enough. Yeah. But...
Also, Heath looks like Clark Kent.
He does, yes.
And I would like to point out, I was not like topless in Hy-Vee. I had like on a shirt and like a jacket. Like I wasn't just running around like, you know, naked from the waist up.
I mean, it would have been a good story if you were.
That would have been good, yeah.
And third, who the fuck are you, sir? Right.
Well, you know what? If you worked out, you'd look like no one still. Yeah. So, gross guy. Maybe we need a continual gross guy segment.
Yeah. Along with unmitigated gall, got to check in on the gross guys. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you – just the gumption
right.
to walk mm-hmm. up to someone and say that.
You think that. You'd see someone and you'd maybe draw that conclusion.
Yeah.
And then you go, you know, you'll tell your friend later.
Yeah.
But to walk after that person as if they're just like begging to hear what you have to say.
Please tell me. Yes. That's
also
wild.
It feels like the internet has enabled so many people to put what they think online without repercussions. This guy went old school.
Right.
He was like, fuck the internet. I'm going to go in person. And I'm going to see the look on his face. And I'm going to get satisfaction from that.
Yeah. What in the... Oh, inside thoughts, Christ. Outside thoughts, people.
Yeah. Good movie. Good choice.
Yeah, that is a
well
good choice.
Well done. General Zod forever. So my first... element of 1981 is it's the first time a TV personality is elected president, and that is Ronald Reagan. And yep, he is a former movie actor and host of television's Death Valley Days, which what was that? I don't know, and I didn't look it up.
The counterpart to Death Valley Nights, maybe?
Yes, I think you're right. But the reason I bring this up for 1981 is because, you know, he was inaugurated, and then he quickly showed what kind of president he was in a labor dispute, because on August 3rd, about 13,000 members of a air traffic controllers union, they walked off the job over, they wanted better pay, they wanted better working conditions. And 2 days later, President Reagan fired over 11,000 of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Not only that, this was one of the few unions that endorsed him. And he was like, fuck you guys, I'm going to fire almost all of you. He said at the press conference the day that he did this, that they are in violation of the law. And if they do not report, this is how I imagine he said it. Yeah. And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated. And they didn't get their jobs back. Later that year, the union disbanded. And then it took like years and years for the FAA to get their staffing levels back up to what it was. So he just ended up like fucking over the airline industry and unions and people.
In a way, he's the reason we have wheels falling off planes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think this is indicative of why it makes me so mad when people are like, Reagan was the best. Like all of that bullshit that conservatives always say all the time. Right. Like if you look back at his record, he was an asshole in so many ways.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's funny that, I shouldn't say it was funny, but it is funny, that this was also the year that he survived maybe the most bizarrely motivated assassination attempt ever. It was, he was shot and wounded by John Hinckley Jr., who believed that the attack would impress Jodie Foster, who was he was obsessed with. And look, I get it. We're all obsessed with Jodie Foster. Mm-hmm. Right. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But that maybe took the cake as far as, you know, motivations.
Yeah.
Well. I mean, knowing what we know about Jodie Foster now, I think what would impress her would be like, I don't know, like a weekend golf trip with the girls. Like, that's, you want to impress Jodie Foster, that's maybe a better way to go.
Yeah, like, dude, sorry, man, right. not into you, not into your type.
No.
So, yeah, so President Reagan was elected, or inaugurated, quickly showed the kind of person he is, and then went on to prove that out for 8 more years, even after almost dying over Jodie Foster.
I forgot.
She hadn't even made Silence of the Lambs.
She hadn't. No. Wow. Well, you know what? I'm going to piggyback on the Reagan situation,
okay,
and showing what kind of president he was.
Great.
Because my second thing that still has an influence on my life, because we still hear about it, is that this is the year that aspartame was approved.
Oh.
1981. But this is an interesting how this came to be, which brings up a lot of things for our current day, you know, situation with the FDA. So J.D. Searle is the chemical company that held the patent to aspartame, which is the active ingredient in NutraSweet. That's what they use to make, like, diet pops a lot, that type of thing. So in 1980, the FDA Board of Inquiry, comprised of 3 scientists, independent, said, actually, this might induce brain tumors. This isn't great, okay? And so they banned it. They said, yeah, based on that finding, that's not going to work. And this really pissed off, of all people, Donald Rumsfeld. Yep, guy who later became our Secretary of Defense. He said, this will not stand.
What was he doing in 1981?
Well, he...
He had a hard-on for aspartame.
Apparently, yeah.
I'm assuming if you follow the money, he had some stake.
No way!
Yeah. So this is shocking. He later became Secretary of Defense. He wasn't, but he said, I'm going to call everyone. I'm going to do everything I can to get this approved, because this was going to be such a great thing for everyone. Which, again, this is a sugar substitute. We weren't solving a disease.
Right.
We weren't doing anything that, you know, he was like, this is really cutting edge. So the day after Ronald Reagan's inauguration, they reapplied. The company reapplied for the patent to use aspartame in food sweetener. And Reagan's new FDA commissioner appointed a 5-person panel and said, okay, we'll review it one more time. And they banned it.
Ooh. Whoa, they Reagan's said, group banned
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they upheld a ban by a 3-2 decision.
Whoa.
And then they said, well, that wasn't fair. We'll add a 6th member.
What?
So they added a 6th member, and then it was 3-3. So now we have a deadlock. And so basically what happened then is Hull, who was appointed by Reagan, was the FDA commissioner, got to break the tie. In a tie, he got to break it. He's also the person that appointed the 6th person. And so then they approved aspartame. And since then, we've had it for that entire time. Hull, who is the head of the FDA, eventually took a position with Searle, that company that had the patent for aspartame.
So gross.
Yeah. And he has never, ever, ever since spoken about aspartame or any of the issues with it. And the FDA still says it's safe to this day, even though we've proven a few times over that it's probably not. Yeah.
Oh God, so there's a bunch of brain tumors out there that we don't know about.
In 1980, they were like, scientists are like, yeah, no, we can't really approve this. And they were like, we have to.
I really like that the Republican playbook was already on hand, where it's like, let's just change the rules. Let's do 6
let's
people.
Let's just add a 6.
Let's just do 6 people. It's fine.
Yeah, and then it'll be a tie, and then I break the tie.
Yeah.
It feels like every playground game that you were ever involved in with that guy,
right,
who was like, let's play touch football, but I'm the quarterback for both teams.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why? That's not
that
right.
Guy sounds great.
Yeah.
He sounds like a fun time.
So aspartame's still around today. Lots of different names for it, but thanks to Donald Rumsfeld, Ronald Reagan, and Arthur Hall.
So all the aspartame that I ingest is a Republican aspartame. Mm-hmm. I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have been very vocal about It's fine. It's fine. It's just fine.
If you just say it for 43 years, people believe you.
Yeah. So I feel like if this had happened like in, I mean, nothing would be different. I'm not saying that. If it happened today, it would probably still get approved in this exact same way, the whole thing. But it's just one of those cases where you want to be like, follow the money, people. Yeah. Like, they had, there was vested interest for them to do this. And the day after his inauguration, so you know this was already in the works that he was going to make this happen for them. Which,
that's hilarious that they were like, Soviets, no, that's later on the list. Yeah. Let's think about sugar.
Aspartame.
Think about sugar.
We got to get this approved. We got to do it. And Donald Rumsfeld's like, I've never taken anything more seriously. Okay.
Amy, when you were a kid and you were just, you know, so anxious about things, like just driving around thinking about the Soviets, thinking about Halley's Comet hitting the Earth and all that stuff, did you think about aspartame?
I didn't. I wish I had known this because that would have been added to the list. It would have gone straight up because mom was real keen on diet soda. So I was like, I would have been like, you're drinking brain tumors right now.
You're drinking actual powdered brain tumors. Yep. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what the first scientist said. And then you appointed five people, and three of them had enough good conscience to be like,
yeah, no.
Listen, it's still not good. It's not good. We thought you had something new. When I agreed to this panel, I was like, awesome. They fixed it. And then I came. It's the same. Wow. It's the same.
I feel like we should add, in addition to your marketing meetings, like, you know, government meetings.
Yes.
Lobby meetings. Mm-hmm. FDA meetings.
FDA meetings.
Yeah, wow. What a story. Reagan was great.
Killing it.
Best.
Second day in office, he's like, aspartame. Cheap. Boop.
And it was probably the next day that he thought of Star Wars. Mm. And then, you know, when they thought of DARE.
Trickle down economics.
Yeah. And he was like, we need to rehab Nancy's image. Just low jobs. So let's put her in charge of DARE.
Which is interesting because it's just say no.
Right.
She feels like she could have taken that advice a couple times.
Yeah, she didn't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got from 81?
You know what? There was a second movie released in 1981.
What?
Uh-huh.
Another one?
Another one.
Oh my God.
And it was called The Great Muppet Caper.
Oh!
Was this the first Muppet movie?
No, the first one is the Muppet movie.
The Muppet movie, okay.
Yeah. And so this is the sequel.
The road trip one.
Came out in 78, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's got all our favorites. Kermit the Frog's in it. Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Gonzo, you know. And in, you know, it's very progressive for the time because Fozzie and Kermit play reporters who are also twin brothers, you know?
Oh, okay.
That's colorblind casting. I've
ever
seen
sure
it in my life.
It sure is. Yep. Species blind too. Uh-huh, yeah.
And it was funny when Gonzo had his hat on, everyone thought they looked identical, but when he took his hat off, they're like, oh, what? You guys aren't related. Like that was the running gag through the whole thing.
So this is sort of the Clark Kent philosophy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, okay. Yep.
Oh, so they're reporters. Gonzo's their photographer, and they're all pretty bad at their jobs. And after being fired, the reporters were fired for failing to report on a robbery. They talked to their newspaper editor boss into paying for a trip to London so they can interview Lady Holiday and report on the jewel heist she is a victim of. Right? So that's pretty ballsy. That's some real Gen Z stuff right there. Like, oh, you fired me? Can you pay for a trip to London? Thanks. So their boss agrees. He agrees and pays for the trip, but only gives them $12 for their plane tickets. And so, I mean, today, I was at an airport recently. $12 will get you a bottle of water in an airport
right
now.
That's not going to cover much.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Obama. So since they only had $12 for airfare.
I'm done. We can't continue.
So the plane won't land in the UK. They have to parachute out of the plane.
Oh,
that's what $12 gets you in 1981. Okay. You know? So they land in the UK and they get a room at the Happiness Hotel.
Oh, is that like the Forest of Feelings?
I think it's much better than
that. Okay, good.
Happiness
So the rest of the Muppets just coincidentally happened to be staying there. You know, Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, the Swedish Chef, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, Beaker, you know. Mm-hmm. So Kermit goes to interview Lady Holiday and meets her new assistant, Miss Piggy, who he thinks is Lady Holiday. And he instantly falls in love with her. Because at the core of every good Muppet story is Kermit and Piggy falling in love. Mm-hmm. And they agree to go out on a date. And so while they're on their date, they're at the same nightclub as the real Lady Holiday, her brother Nikki, and Nikki's associates slash models, Carla, Marla, and Darla. yeah, which are, you know, those are classic bottle names if I ever heard one. You know,
for sure. Carla, Marla, and Darla.
Yep. So at the club, Lady Holiday gets robbed again, losing her necklace, which Miss Piggy gets blamed for, which is some bullshit.
That's some bullshit.
Yeah. So Miss Piggy ends up in prison because the justice system is swift in the United Kingdom.
And unfair.
Yep. And the real thieves plan to steal Lady Holiday's biggest jewel of all. And I'm like, this bitch has got a lot of jewels.
Yeah. It's like Elizabeth Taylor up in here.
She needs to shut it down because she keeps getting robbed. Stay home and lock the door.
Stop wearing them out. That's for sure.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's her biggest jewel of all, the fabulous baseball diamond. Because obviously it's the Muppets, so it's called the baseball diamond.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's on display at the Mallory Gallery.
Oh my God. Mallory Gallery.
Uh-huh. And basically just like how those two items alone didn't earn this movie an Academy Award is a crime itself.
Yes. It is. Yeah.
Kermit rounds up everybody at the Happiness Hotel to help foil the real thieves' plan. And they stop by the prison and Kermit poses as her lawyer to kind of let her know what's going on. So the Muppets go into the Mallory Gallery. They catch the thieves, who are none other than Nikki, Carla, Marla, and Darla. Those were the thieves.
What?
Yes. My jaw is on the ground.
Carla, Marla, Darla, come on.
So it turns out Nikki is packing heat, and while he's holding Kermit at gunpoint, Miss Piggy busts through a stained glass window on a motorcycle to save the day. She'd broken out of prison, using her bare hands, I might add.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
Well, not really her bare hands. I mean, she wears those silk gloves all the time. Yeah, but she was wearing those.
Yeah.
So she knocks Nikki out and then beats the shit out of Carla, Marla, and Darla. And the thieves confess, and Miss Piggy's name is cleared. Because again, the justice in the UK is swift.
Swift!
Very
swift.
That's
amazing.
So the two things that I personally remember the most about this movie are the collectible glass set from McDonald's. That includes a glass with an image of Miss Piggy busting through that stained glass window.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, well, which is like my prized possession until, I don't know, either got broken or got misplaced or something. I don't know. Maybe it got stolen by models with dumb names from my house.
Maybe it did. Yeah.
The other thing that sticks out to me is a line from Janice, who's the lead guitar player for Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. All the Muppets are talking at once and Kermit is trying to quiet them down and everyone stops talking except Janice, who is finishing a story that's completely unrelated to the situation at hand, and says, "Look, Mother, it's my life, okay? So if I want to live on a beach and walk around naked..." And then everyone looks at her, and then she stops. Which is like my brand of humor.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And also, I really like the idea of Janice living that life.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. That's terrific.
That life is full.
So I will leave you with this. Okay. We need a Janice origin story. ASAP.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
A whole movie just about Janice.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. I would watch the hell out of that.
Me too. It's so weird that you mentioned the Swedish Chef because this week on CBS Mornings, they were talking about Sweden joining NATO, and Colbert had done a little skit where he was like, yeah, and then like they flashed to him in the Biden's State of the Union address, and it was the Swedish Chef in the audience, the Muppet, and it went back to Gail King, and she's like, I don't get it. That was a puppet.
Was
and
a
I was
puppet?
Like, I was so enraged because I usually have the news on in the morning when I'm working. And I was like, who doesn't know the Swedish Chef?
Gail, come on.
I was like, how is that a gap in your knowledge?
Right. Yeah. Oprah did her dirty. Oprah's partly responsible.
I think
for
so.
Sure. For sure.
I think so. I was like, get it together. I mean, she was genuinely like, what?
Do you think that, you know, because what, maybe 10 years ago now, they released new Muppet movies.
Yep.
Do you think that brought it to the consciousness of kids again? Or do you think people know who Muppets are anymore? Because when we were kids, it was not just the movies. It was the show, the Muppet show. I don't think that still exists anywhere in any form.
They've tried to redo it a couple times, but it hasn't really stuck.
I think if you ask Mason, he has a knowledge of the Muppets, but he wouldn't have the breadth of knowledge about how many of the other, he might be able to be like Miss Piggy and Kermit, but I don't think beyond that, really.
It's a bummer.
I suppose a lot of kids probably just are like, that's the Sesame Street folks.
That's
very true. Yeah.
Which that's fine. That's they're all good. I always like the eagle too.
Yes.
The eagle's name, but Sam the eagle. Yeah.
I like on the internet, they have the clips of like celebrities that are on Sesame Street.
Yes.
And the outtakes were like Julia Louis-Dreyfus is swearing in front of in front of Elmo. Like, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my next pick is the birth of a legend, which is music television, otherwise known as MTV. First came out in 1981.
Woo.
Mm-hmm. I don't really have much notes beyond that. Just the fact that it came out, it was in existence. And then for years, it was mostly music videos. Then it branched out into so many reality shows. It really started the reality show phenomenon. Then it broke out into all sorts of different, live shows and whatever. I don't know what's happening with MTV now. Does anyone know what's happening with MTV now?
I don't really know, no.
I think RuPaul's Drag Race airs on Friday nights.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Also just want to point out that you said, does anyone know what's happening with MTV? And immediately we both looked at Heath. We were like, what's going on with MTV, Heath? Our reporter on scene, Heath.
Well, that was a big part of what I wanted to bring it up, because I think we probably all have key memories of MTV.
Absolutely.
You have talked about some key memories of MTV. Sure. Namely, your Whitney Houston sitting all day in the summer waiting for that damn video to come on. But I wondered if we could, share. Do you have any other key memories of MTV besides that beautiful Whitney Houston moment?
I know. I remember the TRL days when I was in college. That was big. Uh-huh. That was a big thing. I remember before TRL, they had like a nightly countdown. It was like the top five. Yes. It was like the most requested videos of the day. And it was like Carson Daly was like kind of sitting in the dark and he would play them. And that kind of.
As he should be.
Right? Yeah. That turned into TRL, which was like. That was huge. Yeah, for a long time. I mean, they're like Times Square was shut down all the time, especially when like NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys were there.
And it was the place for artists to go and to be. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They'd go promote stuff.
TRL for me, and the other one, which isn't, this is not to indicate that this was like a fave of mine or whatever, but I have a very distinct memory of when Beavis and Butthead premiered.
Oh my God,
like, oh, this is something totally different, totally like, it felt very even edgy for MTV at the time. And I remember I'd always watch it at my friend's house. We weren't allowed to watch it. So
I wondered if you had it at home. Okay. No. Yeah.
We did because my mom worked for a cable company. We actually got it for free. Like that was one of the perks, but we weren't allowed to watch it. There was a thing on our TV. I think it was blocked, but if you typed in the number, like if you went through if you just scanned, it wouldn't come up. But if you knew the number and you typed it in, it would go to that.
Oh. Of course you figured it worked. Well done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just, that bringing up Beavis and Butthead reminded me of all the different sort of cartoonish shows. Yes. Like Aeon Flux was on MTV.
Daria was good.
Daria,
was great, yeah.
And I think what was so different about Beavis and Butthead was that it was the first time a cartoon was sort of not for kids. It was the first time it was more for like adults and they would say and do things that.
And it felt like a particularly our age, like. And very much of the 90s moment, with grunge and alternative and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've read a little bit about the beginnings of MTV and two things. One, some of those key VJs like Adam Carolla.
I forgot about him.
Now I'm completely forgetting all the names.
There was Kennedy and there was Kennedy. Kurt Loder was news.
Kurt Loder was news.
Martha Quinn,
yes. Yeah. Well, a lot of them are now DJs on the SiriusXM 80s on 8. Channel, which is pretty kind of cool.
I love that.
So they'll often count down on the countdowns for 1981 or whatever.
Yeah.
I also like, because it's a moment that I can bring in David Bowie,
as you should,
as I should. That the first maybe couple years of MTV, it was which is hard to sort of imagine now. It was mostly white artists. They were sort of ignoring a lot of like Michael Jackson, things like that, and David Bowie very publicly called them out on that during an interview and said, why are you not playing, black artists and all these people? And you could see the reporter, who I forget who it is, was sort of like backpedaling, like, oh, well, we're trying to appeal to the masses and to mainstream America. And David. It kept cutting to David's eyes, and he's just sort of boring into his soul, just like looking and looking like, what else are you going to say?
Yeah.
What else are you going to say?
Yeah.
And, you know, he kept going on about some marketing proves this and whatever.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah. Oof. And David, he was not having it. And he was just like, you know, I think it's just a real disservice that you're not including these artists. And by the way, I mean, Prince, come on. You know, he was talking sort of like that about some of these amazing artists that were being left out. So I don't know if that was the only reason that, you know, MTV diversified, but it was a very public reason that came about, which makes me love him all the more.
Even more.
All the more.
As you should.
I don't know if we've really gone into my David Bowie obsession too much here in this show. We did embroid some books, but yeah, that's a thing.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Thank you. It's an important thing.
But lots of memories from MTV on mine, too. But one of the videos that I waited, like, all day long to see was November Rain by Guns N' Roses.
Oh, yeah. And that was a long one.
That was a long one. Yep. And, yeah, it was like waiting for a little epic movie for, you know, that it would play. And that must have been, what, 91, 92? Mm-hmm. So it would be, like, a lot of, you know, grunge videos in the middle of it, which was great. I was into that. But I was waiting, just waiting for November Rain.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I would test the structural integrity of our TV speakers when it came on. They were not great.
I just realized who, sorry, this is going back a topic, but I just realized who Janice the Muppet reminds me of.
Who?
Kid Rock.
I was thinking of Marianne Williamson, the presidential
candidate. Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's just so random. She'd be like, well, if you just believe it, you can achieve it. You're like, what?
Kid Rock is way better.
Yeah.
It's funny that you brought up a SiriusXM though, because Downtown Julie Brown, who is real popular, she's on the 90s channel.
She's on
9,
that's right.
That,
Downtown Julie Brown. That's good stuff too.
It's such an interesting, like, that became a career. VJs became a career.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't know if there's really any personalities today on MTV, but
I think, is Sway still on? Maybe Sway's still on there. Maybe. But they still have, what's funny is, like, everyone knows they don't really play music videos anymore, but they still have the MTV Video Music Awards.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the summer every year. And it's just like, are you really the authority for handing these out anymore?
Because now it's just basically like YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. And
I can't honestly say the last time like I watched MTV, you know?
No, it's been years and years. Used to watch it a lot in college too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because we didn't have it in Parkersburg. Like, we had cable. Oh. It wasn't part of our cable because, you know, the town was like, no, this is scandalous. This is risque. So we could not watch it in Parkersburg.
Wow.
So wait, how did you get to watch it then?
While I was in high school, I worked at a pizza place, and our boss lived in Cedar Falls, and I would give him a VHS tape, but I'd be like, can you go home and just record MTV while you're sleeping? God. So he'd record 6 hours of MTV, and he'd bring me back the tape, and then I'd go watch MTV. Like, I could watch what I wanted to and fast forward.
We are solutions-oriented podcast, and Heath was a solutions-oriented teenager.
Uh-huh. Other than the fact we just buried the whole lead of the MTV story.
Yes!
Heath was so ahead of his time. He was like, take this, record it,
leave it on overnight.
That's so resourceful.
Yep.
At that age, just been like, bummer. He's like, no, I won't stand for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
If they ever, you know, like, cut off the internet, like, in totalitarian countries, you will find a way around it. You'll figure it out for all of us.
That's who I'm going to first. Yes.
Turn on my hotspot. Something.
What's your last one, Erin?
My last one is a toy slash puzzle that we all have I don't know if we love, but the Rubik's Cube.
Oh.
Now, it was not invented in 1981.
Okay.
It was invented in 1974 by a Hungarian designer and architect who really invented it to help his architect students and engineering students understand how things work together. It was only when he took the whole thing apart and tried to put it back after he moved all the pieces that he was like, oh, I've created a puzzle. Like, he couldn't figure it out.
Oh. Wow.
And so why it's important for this year is because this is the first year that they held a speed cubing championship.
Oh, boy. Mm,
so hot.
So hot. Now, this is not something that was on my radar at all until last year.
Okay.
When Mason and I found a documentary on Netflix called the Speed Cubers. And it follows some young students who are speed cubing championships, and it follows them like through their championship, like going to the next, how their parents support them. Like Mason was fascinated because the speed that they can do a Rubik's Cube in is amazing. And I didn't realize, I thought that was a new phenomenon. So when I was doing research and I was like, oh, the first championship was held in 1981 in Munich. And the best time was 38 seconds it took someone to solve it, which is kind of, because now it's evolved enough that people, like, there's solutions out there, right? So they practice the solutions. They practice how it should go. And obviously when you're in a speed cubing championship, they give it to you in different states. Like, it's not just, you know, so you have to figure it out how to solve it. But there are definite steps now. Well, that came out of the evolution of internet. You know, there's a lot more research you could do to figure out how to do it. But this is also the year that the U.S. held their first one.
Okay.
So the first one was in Munich in March. And then in November, the U.S. said, we'd like to get in on some of that hot TV action.
I hope they included the shoulder movements you just did. Yeah. I'd like to get in on that action.
On that speed Cuban action.
It made me think, before this, I was thinking, what if on a dating app, someone's headline was like, I'm a speed cuber? That would be an instant no from
That's
me.
A hard pass. Yeah, that's a hard pass. Although hard pass. It is an opportunity for you to touch someone else's speed cube and say, how do you solve it? Because I think that would be, that, from what I understand from the documentary, you're not to touch other people's Rubik's
Cubes.
I think
touching a speed cube is some sex act, isn't it?
Uh-huh, yeah. I think so. Especially in Germany.
True.
People pay good money for that in Germany.
They sure do. They sure do.
They sure
And there's
do.
World championships for it, too.
So the U.S. time was 26.04 seconds.
Ooh.
Yes, and it was broadcast on a show called That's Incredible on December 7th. You remember it?
I remember that. Not that episode necessarily, but I remember that show. That's Incredible, yeah.
I do not.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So I just was fascinated by that because I feel like Rubik's Cube is something we've all encountered at some time. Either like it was given to you as like a weird stocking stuffer gift or whatever. But there's a very distinct strategy to it. And I did not realize. Actually, Mason and I really enjoyed that documentary. It was really interesting. But I thought that was a new thing. And no, it's been since 1981. People have been speed cubing.
They've been doing it your whole life.
My whole life. They've been out there. I also love the idea, speaking of like meetings, that the guy was like, oh, I made this new thing for my students to learn. And then he was like, oh, shit. I don't know how to do it.
I also like that he took like, oh, I can't do it anymore, so now I'm going to give it to everyone.
Yeah.
I'm going to give, you know, frustration the world
everyone
over.
Everyone can have it. But there was also, as I was doing research, there was a lot of, like, racing about this patent. Because other people kind of like took the idea and were like running with it. Like there's a story of a publishing company stealing a solution from like a 9-year-old.
Oh my God.
I had it like written in a notebook and some publishing guy saw it. And then they were making a book about how to solve. There was a lot of weird like corporate espionage going on around the Rubik's Cube, which is fascinating. It also tells you about the toy landscape in 1981. That they were like, this is going to be a hit.
I always think of Big when I think of the toy landscape because apparently it was a cutthroat world at that toy company.
It was.
And they just needed a man-sized child to play with them to know what was going to work or not.
Mm-hmm. Big piano Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we need.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I had a Rubik's Cube when I was a kid.
Did you?
And I remember being deeply frustrated for not being able to solve it.
Yeah.
And so, again, as a solutions-oriented person, I just moved the stickers.
Yeah, you did.
I just rearranged the stickers on that side of it. And I was like, look, I did this. I'm a genius.
And everyone can see they're kind of peeled up.
Yeah, yep. I fooled a grand total of 0 people.
Okay, well. But, I mean, you showed your solution-oriented mindset.
Now I want to get one and see and, like, read on the internet and see if there's really, like, a concrete strategy of how. Because, I mean, it feels like you could start in 10 million different places and have to end in the same place. I don't know how that a strategy can be applied, but I'd like to figure it out.
It feels similar to, did you ever get like, I felt like there were sort of toys that were popular. There were almost like magic sets, like interlocking chains and things like that, that you were then supposed to figure out how to remove and everything. And I would immediately get so annoyed and frustrated. I'm like, nope, unsolvable.
Well, we do know your healthy hatred of games, so this is not a surprise.
This is true.
This
came early. Yeah,
it came early. Uh-huh. This came up. Mason started piano lessons recently, and the first time we went, there was a solved Rubik's Cube on the table.
Oh.
And Mason asked a question. He was like, oh, they solved it. And he said, yeah, somebody was here the other day and solved it in like a minute. And then every time that either Mike or I go with him to piano lessons, one of us updates the other. Like the very next week, Mike's like, oh, it's all messed up. Somebody messed it up again. And then the next week it was put back together. Like whoever is coming in between the lessons.
What a saga.
I know. We're like so invested in this dumb Rubik's Cube, but.
This is why games are stupid. You're getting invested for nothing.
I know. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. What you got last, Heath?
You know what? Hold on to your hats.
Oh, boy.
Your lice-infested hats.
Because
there was a third movie came out in 1981.
Whoa! Oh, there were three movies! Uh-huh. Whoa.
Big year for movies.
Big year for the cinema. Uh-huh.
Endless Love.
Oh, God.
Starring the most successful blue jean model of all time, Brooke Shields.
Oh, wow. That was a fucked up movie.
Mm-hmm. It sure was. Oh, it sure was, everybody. It came out in the summer of 81, and this is the second episode in a row now of this podcast that we've discussed Brooke Shields. So maybe, I know it's a solutions-oriented podcast. Yeah. Maybe it's a Brooke Shields fan podcast, too.
Maybe it is.
Might be, yeah.
And so in the plot of Endless Love, everybody, is absolutely bonkers. Brooke Shields plays Jade, a high school student who falls in love with David. They get real close real fast. One night, Jade's mom catches Jade and David doing it, and instead of telling them to keep their hands to themselves, she's wishing it was her with Dave instead of Jade. Normal, healthy mom stuff.
Yep.
Jade's dad is busy pointing out red flags to anyone who will listen, but no one's listening.
Been there.
So Jade's grades start to suffer, and her dad says, no peen till the end of the semester.
Oh, bummer.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
He didn't use the word peen, but you get it.
He should have.
Yeah. He should have.
It would have been fine in that context of the movie.
Yeah.
David doesn't like that one bit, but Jade's mom convinces him that it's a good idea, maybe because she thought she'd have a better chance with David, with Jade out of the picture. I don't know. So one of David's friends tells him a fun and safe story about when he was a kid and he set his family's house on fire by accident, but then put it out and his family thought he was a hero for doing so. And I guess they didn't do arson investigations then, but whatever. So David's inspired to set Jade's family's house on fire, but doesn't put the fire out in time and the whole place burns up.
No!
But the family escapes physically unharmed.
What is this movie?
It's so fucked up.
So David gets put on probation and sent to a mental hospital for evaluation.
Okay.
There's also a no contact order between him and Jade and her family, who have moved to Manhattan, where Jade's parents decide to divorce, which, you know, it's a good idea. Yeah. That's the one good idea so far in this movie. Mm-hmm. Yep. So when David gets out of the hospital, he goes to Manhattan to get his lady back, but finds her mom first, and mom tries to seduce him, which is very gross and weird. But somehow exactly what you'd expect at this point. But before turning her down, though, he finds Jade's address at college. So.
Oh, my gosh.
David's about to catch the bus to surprise Jade at college, but then he sees her dad on the street. So being the calm, cool, and collected individual that he is, David decides to start chasing Jade's dad, who gets hit by a car and killed while trying to escape his daughter's ex-boyfriend. David is sentenced to just 5 years in prison, everybody. Uh-huh. Just 5 years, which seems extremely lenient to me. Jade is despondent because she's convinced no one will ever love her again the way David does, which is what any sane individual would want in this situation.
Yeah. But that's real love.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only sane individual was recently run over and killed by a car. So in lieu of a sane person, Jade's mom encourages Jade to go visit Dave in prison, which she does.
I forgot about that.
While this movie is deeply, deeply fucked up, the song from the movie, also titled Endless Love, is actually a very romantic song.
It is, which when it's paired with the movie is so weird.
Yep. Lionel Richie and Diana Ross sing it. And Lionel Richie wrote it, and I would bet $300 American dollars that Lionel Richie based the song off the movie's title alone and never actually saw the movie or read the script.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and in a surprise twist, everybody, Endless Love is Tom Cruise's first movie role, and he played the part of the kid who gave David the idea to start Jade's house on fire, and that just feels right to me.
It really does.
Also, wasn't Endless Love covered again by Mariah Carey and Luther Vandross?
Which I wanted to play at my wedding, and my husband told me no. And I was like, what? Mariah Carey and a gay man singing Endless Love? Actually,
what is wrong
with
this?
You know what? I take that back, Michael. I wanted it to be the song we danced to at our wedding, and he said no. I did play it, though.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, I gotta be honest, I'm shook. I didn't see the movie, so yeah. I am a little bit.
And when you hear the song and right. know that it's
yes,
from this movie.
Yes, because I know the song.
You're imagining it's this beautiful romance right. of, you know, teenage love, and it is fucked up.
I'm thinking like along the lines of like the Blue Lagoon thing with yes. Brooke Shields, like real sweet. Yes. And like they, you know, they worked it out and it was real nice and everyone was coming from a good place and nobody was a crazy fucker.
So are they together at the end when he gets out of prison?
I think that ends with him still in prison, but she's like going to visit him being like, you know, I'll wait for you. Like that's the message that is.
This poor girl's throwing her life away.
Yeah.
So this is where all stalking began.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. this is.
And this is where that idea that, oh my God, what's a guy willing to do for you? And how much does he love you?
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks to the idea of like, trying to be the cool mom. Like, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be the cool mom. If you know your teen, don't be like, yeah, your teens are going to do it anyway. You can do it at my house. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let them figure out a place to do it somewhere else. be resourceful.
Yes. It feels like this was the precursor maybe for a lot of weird movies later on. Like, uh-huh. think of Fear with yeah. Mark Wahlberg and Reese
yeah.
Witherspoon.
Yeah.
And yeah. it seems like there's some elements in there from this.
I did not know. Like, I know the song. Yeah. And I knew there was a movie. Never knew that's what. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
I don't think I watched it when I was a kid, but I watched it maybe in my 20s or something. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Even just watching the preview for it.
Yes.
It's, you're just like, what in the God? Holy shit.
God. I was not expecting the dad to die. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And it's weird, too, because I know Brooke Shields had, I'm not sure if her mom's still alive, but had a real iffy relationship with her mom. Because her mom was, like, putting her out on all these jobs. And
Momager.
Like, you know. Yeah. And was, you know, Brooke Shields was her income.
And they were, like, pimping her out hard at a super young age and making her sexualized at a really young age. It's gross.
Mm-hmm.
This probably didn't help that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. I don't, like, I'm.
You are shook?
I am shook by just the fact that Tom Cruise told someone to set out. And we continued to be like, you know what? That guy.
Uh-huh. That guy right there. He's got something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I feel like, honestly, knowing what we know now, he'd be a better fit for David.
Yes,
yeah,
that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Wow.
And then at some point, he'd be like, you're not into Scientology? I'm going to burn this house down.
I'll burn it down.
And he was chasing after the dad because the dad wouldn't sign up for the classes. And
yes.
So he was,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That is what it was.
Yeah.
The dad was going to say where Shelley Miscavige was.
Well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my final one takes us to space.
Oh.
We're going to space, everyone.
Space!
Because in 1981, the Voyager 2 satellite came close to Saturn and took pictures of its moons and its rings.
Sounds dirty.
Yeah. It got real in there. Real into Saturn. And I bring this up because I think...
I hope it got Saturn's consent.
Yeah, it is.
Saturn, like, who are you? Why are you penetrating my rings?
No. Just in line at Walgreens.
Yeah.
Stop trying to study me.
Saturn's just trying to get that prescription filled.
But this brings up what I think is a fascinating story of the Voyager satellites, which were launched in 1977. There were two of them, the Voyager 1 and the Voyager 2, and their main mission was to study Jupiter and Saturn, right? And so it took 4 years for them to get to their respective places, and they made a bunch of discoveries. They found the active volcanoes on the moon of Io, and they, you know, looked at the rings, you know, without consent.
Uh-huh, yep. Like the pervs they are.
Exactly. And because they got pervy and they got all the goods, like a true stalker, then they went further.
Ooh, of course
and
they did.
They kept going into space. They
and Lionel Rich wrote a song about it.
They wanted to penetrate deep space, so they kept going.
No.
And in fact, in 2012, Voyager 1 made it into interstellar space, which is where it's the region between stars filled with material ejected by the death of nearby stars millions of years ago.
Oh, so, gosh. Like,
it's star dead ashes? Ejaculate. It's just all of And Voyager 2.
They didn't mention that in Star Wars.
They didn't talk about
they really glossed over that
space
part.
Ejaculation. They didn't.
Voyager 2 got into interstellar space in 2018, and both spacecraft are still out there. They're still sending scientific info through the Deep Space Network, which feels like a conspiracy. Ooh, yep.
Uh-huh. It does.
It does.
But what I really love about this story is the story of the Golden Records. So basically NASA put a time capsule on these satellites, and these Golden Records, it contained all sorts of audio and visual of life here on Earth, with the idea that if they ever made it out into extraterrestrial land, someone would know about us and who we were at that time. So they were 12-inch gold-plated copper discs. Nice. And they had sounds and images.
Like rims?
Yes.
Like, this sounds like rims for like a car.
I just, why didn't they have to be gold plated?
Because probably Trump got involved in something, you know. But the contents of the record were selected for NASA by a committee chaired by Carl Sagan. Name in science. They brought together 115 images and a variety of natural sounds like wind and thunder and birds and whales and other animals. And then they added music from all different cultures and eras. And there were spoken greetings from Earth in 55 languages. And there were printed messages from President Carter and UN Secretary General Waldheim.
Mm.
You know, that guy.
Yeah.
But what is crazy is that it will be 40,000 years before they make a close approach to any other planetary system. So they're just designed to just keep on going for years and years. So we'll all be gone and dead by the time.
Speak for yourself.
And I'm talking about I'm talking about humanity, not just us. Like, as a species.
Why? What do you know?
Done.
Yeah, what?
I mean, we saw the movie Deep Impact. We know what's going to happen.
That's true.
Yeah. I was thinking, though, when you were talking, I was like, boy, those satellites are still out there working. They must be tired.
They must be
But
so
apparently,
tired.
They're like 5% into their journey.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going. And there was a fun fact that at one point, they wanted to include Chuck Berry as one of the musical selections on the Golden Record. But the committee was like, oh, that's a little too much. That's a little too outrageous. This was 1977. 1977, they thought Chuck Berry was too outrageous.
Who did they put on there? Pat Boone?
It must have just been like traditional music and stuff, right? Or like classical and things like that.
I'm still kind of thrown by the choosing to put like nature sounds on there.
Yeah.
Like that's an odd.
Yeah.
Because, okay, the purpose was if this we found another life form, they would have an idea of what life was like, and then there's just whale sounds. Yeah.
What they should have included was a bit of MTV.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it wasn't made yet, I guess, in 1977.
They should have put a Diet Coke in there.
They should have put some aspartame.
Those whales, maybe, you know, there's them gay whales that are out in the ocean now.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And it's been shown in lots of different, like, pop culture and things like that. But I always just thought that story was so interesting.
That is interesting.
And on NASA.com, you can chart the journey. You can see, like, when it, you know, got to whichever planet, you know, because at some point they went to Neptune and to Uranus and got right in there into Uranus. And then, you know, it charts, like, when they got out into space, deep space, and, you know, where they are now. And so it's really, really cool. But yeah, 1981.
I didn't realize it had like 40,000 years to go.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it is saying a lot that they think that the satellite will last 40,000 years. I mean, you know.
That's true.
The construction, I don't know if it's going to last that long. But, you know, whatever.
That's some unearned white man confidence.
It really is. It really is.
Because I love to imagine meetings.
Yes.
I was imagining the guy that was like the engineer in charge of the construction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like the high-level, you know, scientists that then had to go to the meeting where they're like, here's what we're putting on. We thought Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
We said no. And he's like, I'm trying to make this thing last 40,000 years. I don't give up what noises you put on there, okay? I don't need to come to this meeting anymore.
Record this meeting and put it on there. That'll show humanity.
That'll show how ridiculous we are.
It is fascinating to think that, let's say, 40,000 years from now, it's still around. There's an alien out there.
They should beam this podcast up there. That's what they should do. People would be like, oh, I get it now.
I understand humanity. Yeah.
Yes.
But they don't have our podcast, so they just get a bunch of whale sounds. And they're like, huh, so the species over on that planet Earth,
right?
Just a bunch of gay whales.
We can make whale sounds.
They're like, we don't really need to go there, I guess, because we got that covered.
How did that sound again, Heath?
We're an all-purpose podcast. We check all the boxes.
Oriented.
We
really do. You can skip back to that section for noise when you're trying to fall asleep.
Exactly. Just repeat that. Just repeat it over and over.
Yeah.
Sleep like a baby.
A whale baby.
Raised by his two daddies. Well, that was 1981.
What a year.
What a year. There were three movies released in 1981.
Record.
Some weird cinematic space stuff, features. A shitty president, and some, you know, carcinogenic sugar.
That sums it up. That is a summary, I think. Yes, yes. Loved it.
We'll be back. Another year. Another take. It. More movies. More hot takes. More solutions.
Yep. Totally solutions. More animal sounds.
Solutions from one person. I think we've established we've got one solid solution person.
Fuzzy Memories is a Broads and Books production. It's hosted by Heath Smith, Aaron Johnston, and Amy Lee Lillard. The show is produced by Amy Lee Lillard. Follow us at Fuzzy Memories Pod on Instagram for clips and highlights. And follow us at Broads and Books Productions for updates on new shows coming your way. See you next time.
Lines that you have that I retexted her because I'm like, I miss that and I am dying at home by myself. But this week it was your when
random badge.
Last, yeah, when you said so you're just a random badge.
Also, Haley texted us and was just like that point where you just said just shove it up your butt. She was dying. Yeah. Could not get over it.
It took me a minute because just out of nowhere I got a text that said just shove it up your butt. And I was like,
it's like, huh, okay.
Out of context, that's something.
Yeah.